Talk 580 KMJ presents Hometown Heroes, honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler. News Talk 580 KMJ presents Hometown Heroes, honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to Hometown Heroes, coming to you live from Biden Field this afternoon. Bulldog baseball coming up at 2:05 with a pregame show at 1:45. But between now and then, of course, it's Hometown Heroes, my weekly visit with veterans of World War II. Last week, you heard me chat with a couple of WASPs, women Air Force service pilots who were honored with the Congressional Gold Medal last week in Washington. Today, a guest that I guess is more of a frequent variety here on the program, a male pilot from World War II. He wasn't delivering the mail. He was delivering troops and supplies on some pretty big planes in the Pacific, not for the Army Air Corps, not for the Navy, but for the United States Marine Corps. And he's going to tell us what SCAT stands for as far as his military history is concerned. Please welcome in Howard Nielsen of Delano, my guest today. Howard, how you doing?
I think I'm hanging on real good.
Well, I know you had to do that in the skies in the Pacific a bit during World War II, but let's start where I start with so many veterans. You grew up in Rich Grove,
right,
south of Fresno, obviously north of Bakersfield.
Yes, it's about 10 miles east of Delano.
Exactly. You're out on a farm milking cows.
Well, yeah, there were a few.
A few right. Cows. And what do you remember about December 7th? 1941. How did you hear about the attacks on Pearl Harbor? What do you remember about that Sunday morning?
Well, I have to go back just a little bit. I'd finished a couple of years up north at Davis, so I had my 2 years. I was talked into a civil pilot training course because I wasn't in jeopardy in any way. And I was finishing up at the Meadows Field there in Bakersfield, getting close to my tests in September, and or December rather, and I had an early flight, so I was driving down, and oddly enough, didn't turn on the car radio. I got to the field, and all the gates were locked, and I thought, oh my God, what's I thought someone had stolen a plane or something, and I was told then what was happening.
Did that hit you right away, that this was going to change your life?
Well, yeah, it kind of launched us into a little different. We had to leave the coast, of course. We had to go back to Owens Valley and finish our civil pilot training courses. So I did that one and the secondary, and in June went down to Los Angeles and signed up for Navy flight training.
And I imagine most people that sign up for flight training and that want to go out and fly for their country, their idea is they're going to be in some hotshot plane that's got great maneuverability, fantastic airspeed, can shoot down the enemy and have all kinds of bells and whistles. Is that what you were in it for?
Well, who knows? I was always one that just kind of took everything as it came, and I really didn't know what I was headed for. In fact, we got diverted into many different things. I went to twin engine when I got to Corpus Christi. I went to twin engine, and many of my friends did go single pilot.
Well, I had to ask, because most guys who end up flying the bigger planes wanted at some time or another to fly the smaller ones. But in the end, most people are thankful for what they ended up doing and thankful for the way it worked out. I don't think you would have written a book called What a Life if you weren't thankful for your experiences. And by the way, if you're listening and you're interested in reading what Howard has to say, his autobiography, What a Life, which covers not only his days in the service, but his entire colorful existence to these days, is on Amazon.com. We have it linked on our website, KMJNow.com. If you go to my blog in the Hometown Heroes section, you'll find a picture of that book and a link to the Amazon page for it. And I've had a chance to read your book, Howard, and it's a very candid account account of everything that you endured during your time in the service and afterwards. And by the end of the program, I know we're going to get a detailed explanation on what SCAT stands for in your mind, how SCAT and President Nixon both connected to you, which will be quite interesting. But first, tell me about this nickname that you developed early on in your days in the service. They called you Wooden Hands?
Oh, that was there at Los Alamitos. I had I asked for a delay of being called because we had a wheat harvest to complete. So I ended up during the beginning summer handling grain sacks. By the time I got to the gate at Los Alamitos, my hands were pure leather, and I had been handling about 145-pound wheat sacks, so body was in great condition. And we all shook hands, and then no one would shake hands with me again.
Your hands were too tough, huh?
They were almost afraid of me. So it was all because of handling those burlap edges of a wheat sack.
Well, you know, one thing that that I appreciate with all the veterans that that I've interviewed, I always like feeling that handshake. And it doesn't matter if somebody's 85 or 95, you can still feel that grip. And I get the feeling that back in those days during World War II, you guys probably tried to impress each other a little bit with those handshakes, with the strong grip.
Well,
and it sounds like you had the strongest.
I still have to kind of watch myself, especially with women. I'm just used to grabbing a hold of something. And it's not always the best.
Well, we're talking via the magic of radio today, so I'm not here to feel that wooden hand for myself. But I did read in your book an account of another body part, the ankles of your Marine combat conditioning instructor, whose ankles were a little sore thanks to you. Now, give us a little background on this. When you end up in the Marine Corps, they're going to try to toughen you up pretty quick. They're going to try to make a man out of you. What was the conditioning like that you guys had to endure?
Yeah, it was almost laughable because I was in better condition than 9/10 of them.
That's your cow milking background, I guess, huh?
Right. You asked about SCAT, and I want to get to that real quick. I'm not one of the heroes. I was just a truck driver. I got there about a year and a half after the excitement and also the name SCAT. Our group was a hastily formed group, nucleus group of airline pilots that had former military training, and the ships that landed the first troops on Guadalcanal had to leave real fast because of Japanese Navy. So the August 6th group were pretty much stranded, and a nucleus of air supply was hastily formed in San Diego, and they set a record that's, I guess, still stands, flight from San Diego to Honolulu. And September 3rd, this is barely a month later, our first plane landed at Henderson Field. And of course, Guadalcanal being in the Solomons, the name SCAT, Solomon Combat Air Transport, was immediately initiated. So there's the SCAT.
And the SCAT became legendary before you got there, but you would have plenty of adventures with SCAT once you did get to the Pacific, and several connections to names that would become well-known to you and to others. I teased this story about the Marine combat conditioning and the ankles, and I guess you found a unique way to kind of get back at the drill instructor for torturing you guys?
Well, we were taken up to Camp Pendleton, and of course all those ground pounders up there were firmly convinced that pilots were a bunch of sissies.
Sure.
And they got a little rough, but it all worked out, and frankly, it was good training, and it was kind of fun.
And what I read in your book was that you tailed behind the instructor and accidentally ran into the back of him a few times and stepped on his feet?
Well, could.
Gave him some sore heels?
I don't remember that part. Oh, shoot.
Well, you are the author of the book. I know that. The book we're talking about is What a Life.
I was not a swimmer. And they wanted us, of course, to do a lot of things in that big pool. And I told them, well, put me down in the shallow end. Otherwise, you're going to have a drowning on your hands. And I was not a water person. That's why I flew.
I hear you. And from reading your book, we're talking to Howard Nielsen of Delano. He's our guest today. He flew with the U.S. Marine Corps in the Pacific during World War II. But a domestic flight that you took early on was pretty adventurous as well. And I guess maybe there were some lessons to be learned in this instance. Tell me about the flight to Quantico, where you guys got a little misdirected and almost ran out of gas.
Oh, that was, This guy, one of the characters, moved up in rank, and now, because he had been a pilot, he became quite prominent in our training and conducted our flight to my training flight, supposedly, to the East Coast. He never allowed us to even touch the controls.
And it was supposed to be a training flight for you guys to be familiar with this airplane.
And we should screwed up everything. First of all, he wouldn't take the heading from the navigator, so the navigator just went to reading Reader's Digest and forgot about it. We proceeded to almost get lost that night, and an airline led us into Washington Airport.
And you were supposed to land at Quantico at the Marine Base, but you had to land.
Yeah, it was pretty exciting. Needless to say, an excitement we didn't need.
Well, so you, first of all, you didn't reach your destination. You had to land at another airport because you were out of gas.
We didn't go over there till the next day.
And we should tell the audience what these planes are. This is an R-4D, which the Army called a C-47, and the airlines called a DC-3, I guess.
But that's correct.
It's a glorified airliner that you're flying. Well,
it was the queen of the sky.
Uh-huh.
A great old plane, I'll tell you. Anyone that's ever been associated loved that plane.
And it was supposed to hold 800 gallons in the tank?
Yeah.
But when you got down in D.C. after missing Quantico and ended up at the wrong airport, how many gallons went into that tank?
They put in about 815 gallons. I don't know how they did that, but it must have drained the sumps and everything. I don't know how we taxied back, because it was absolutely nothing but fumes left.
Well, that would certainly be the epitome of fumes. And maybe that instructor was trying to teach you guys a lesson to not do what he did and make sure you communicate and trust each other.
This character, he got back to Pendleton, and he asked me, he says, well, what did you learn? I says, I learned everything we're not supposed to do. And I just turned and walked away from him, because I had no respect for the man whatsoever.
Whew. You know, I also got a kick out of a story you shared. And when you spend time in the service during World War II, especially in a theater of war as gruesome and dangerous and deadly as the Pacific was, and someone says, well, what'd you do with your 45 during the war? They don't expect the answer that you would give them. Why don't you tell us the only thing you used your 45 for during World War II?
No, well, I had built a lot of my own furniture in the hut there in New Caledonia, and I built a little sink. Well, I had tools. I had taken tools with me, but I did not take a drill. So the only way I could put a drain in that sink was to shoot a hole in it. And that was the only time I fired that 45 overseas.
And we're not advising anyone at home to try a home improvement project using a 45.
No, it wasn't even a good drain.
But it worked for you.
Yeah.
Now, you can help me here. Paint a picture for our listeners of what life was like in the Pacific. And here you are in the Solomon Islands. And you guys had these big R-4Ds to fly different things, and we'll talk about some of those flights that got a little hairy for you. But just life in general, did you have what you needed, what you expected? Did you have to live with a lot less than you expected? What was life like? And if you ever felt that you were short of supplies, did you have a way of getting them from maybe other people, like other branches of service down there in the Pacific?
Well, When we were flying up in the islands, of course, our schedules and everything were far from regular, so we rarely got a chance to eat regularly. But, no, we weren't short of anything. I'll tell you, the Astoria Hotel, by any means, a lot of times, especially during the summer period, we would have to wet our sheets. We would put them in water so that we could at least doze off. And, of course, we slept under netting spread up in the islands. And some of that wasn't too comfortable. But, we weren't out there for a picnic. So these were things we expected. And, no, we didn't suffer. It wasn't the greatest kind of a life, but we did fine.
Well, and you were all in it together, at least as Marines. Once a Marine, always a Marine, they say. And I know there's some little rivalries with the Army guys and the Navy guys. And I understand that you and some of your fellow Marines became fairly adept at procurement, whether supplies were supposed to be headed to the Marines or not.
Well, the Navy, you see, we were a part of the Navy.
Right.
And even the Navy had less priority than did England. And the Air Force, they could get everything. They could get anything they wanted. In fact, we had to steal parts to keep a lot of our planes going. And so that the Marine Corps develops an ability that's not in the manual or anything else, but we learned to survive, and we did real good at it.
Well, and it's clear that you've done well surviving, because you're talking with us today. Why don't you tell our audience how old you are now, Howard?
I'm 89.
You're going to be 90 this year, right? Next year.
January, yeah.
Uh-huh. That'll be a big one. And I know you've got some other big stories to share with us today. We're going to talk about some unorthodox landings you made in that big boat of an airplane, the R-4D, talk about some of the wildlife you encountered, some friendly fire incidents, and I'm just trying to set the stage for our listeners here, some of the things that we're going to talk about.
Right.
And I also want to hear from you about how you got to know a man who would later become the President of the United States, Richard Nixon. But tell you what, Howard, we're going to take a break here.
Okay.
And then when we come back, we'll get to those stories.
Mm-hmm.
So have them ready. Be ready to shoot and fire.
Mighty fine.
You don't have your 45 with you today, but we don't need any drains.
I gave that thing up a long time ago.
All right, Howard, hang tight. We'll be right back. Howard Nielsen of Delano is our guest today. If you're interested in his book, What a Life, go to our website, kmjnow.com, and you can click on the link there to go to the amazon.com page and order it. But we'll be right back with the rest of Hometown Heroes. I'm live at Biden Field. Bulldog Baseball coming up at 2 o'clock. This is Hometown Heroes on News Talk 580 KMJ.
This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty on 580 KMJ. This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty on 580 KMJ.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. Paul Leffler with you from Biden Field this afternoon. Bulldog Baseball coming up at 2:05. We'll get to the pregame show at 1:45. And until then, we continue our discussion today with Howard Nielsen of Delano. More than 65 years ago, he was a Danish-American dairyman turned Marine Corps pilot flying R-4Ds in the Pacific. And Howard, those were pretty big airplanes. And I know that there were a couple times where you were shot at, not necessarily by the enemy, but is it fair to say that the weather was a bigger enemy than the Japanese?
That was pretty much our enemy, because we were not. By that time, the war had pretty much moved on ahead of us. And my last flights were into the Philippines, which we caught up with it there. But you asked about Nixon.
Yeah, I wanted to set that up with, now, I've heard lots of stories on this program from veterans about famous people that they served with, and earlier in the war, you had some encounters with a general who would be pretty famous by the end of the war, General Geiger, who was in charge of forces on Okinawa by the end of the war, but you got to know a young lieutenant, and you certainly had no inkling, I would imagine, that this man would become the President of the United States, did you?
No, his big, I think the big record at that time was he was one hell of a poker player. But we were, Gary Monroe and I, it was a flight from Admiralty's back to Guadalcanal to Bougainville. We got weathered out, so we had to stop at Green Island. And the operations officer for SCAT on Green Island. His
stories. Big, have him ready. Ready to shoot.
Get the big. At that time, it was one Green Island poker
stories. Have him ready.
We
ready to shoot.
Gary
Manov
Delonite
of Del
was a flight
of Del
Admiral
of Del
Tugwatan
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 of Del Tugwatan of Del
Tugwatan
of Del
Tugwatan
of Del Tugwatan of Del Tugwatan of Del Tugwatan
of Del Tugwatan
of Del Tugwatan
of
Del Tugwatan
of
Del Tugwatan
of
Del Tugwatan of Del Tugwatan
of Del
Tugwatan
of Del
Tugwatan
of Del
Tugwatan of Del
Tugwatan
of Del Tugwatan 580.
Gary
580.
Nye
580.
Was a flight.
580.
Admiral
580.
To go up
580.
To
Bougainville.
We got wet. So we stopped at an island. And actions officer for on.
Tell me about. Tell me about. Tell me about. Tell me about
the big.
Tell me about
that time.
Tell me about
it was one.
Tell me about
poker.
Tell me about. Tell me about
we.
Tell me about
Gary and I was a flight admiral to go up to Bougainville. We got wet, so we stopped an island and options officer for on this big. Get the big that time was one poker. We. Gary and I was a flight admiral to go up to Bougainville. We got wet, so we stopped an island and
tell me about. Tell me about. Tell me about.
Officer.
Tell me about.
For.
Tell me about.
On.
Tell me about. Tell me about. Tell me about. Tell me about.
The big.
Tell me about
that time.
Tell me about.
Was one poker play. We. Gary and I was a flight admiral to go up to
580.
Bougainville.
580.
We got wet.
580.
So we.
580.
Stop.
580.
An island.
580.
And
580. 580. 580.
Officer.
580.
For
580.
On.
We'll be right. We'll be right.
Big,
we'll be right. We'll be right.
Get the big.
We'll be right.
That time.
We'll be right.
It was one.
We'll be right.
Poker.
We'll be right. We'll be right.
We.
We'll be right. We'll be right.
Gary Mann
of Del
Nye.
Mann of Del.
Was a flight.
Mann of Del.
Admiral.
Mann of Del.
To go out.
Mann of Del.
To.
Mann of Del.
Bougainville.
Mann of Del.
We got wet.
Mann of Del.
So we.
Mann of Del.
Stop.
Mann of Del.
Island. And Green Island.
Stories.
Gavin
Red.
Officer.
Ready to shoot.
For. On Green. His Green Island.
Big, stories. Gavin Red.
Get the big.
Ready to shoot.
That time.
Incident.
It was one. Poker. Poker. Down. We had the. We. At Green. Gary Minzy and I. Operate. Was a flight. Admiral. Peter. To go out. Scat. To. Player. Greenville. But. We got wet. We're. So we. Stopped. Monroe. An island. And. Right from. On his bastions, officer and boat for time was on time was said time was time was time was get the big time was that time was one time was poker time was time was weed time was
tenant
Gary
a tenant
Nye
a tenant
was a flight
tenant
admiral
a tenant
to go up
a tenant
to
a tenant
and bill
a tenant
we got wet
a tenant
so we
a tenant
stop
a tenant
an island
encounter
and
your encounter. Your encounter. Your encounter.
Officer.
Your encounter.
For.
Your encounter.
On.
Your encounter. Your encounter. Your encounter. Your encounter.
Get the bigger. That time. It was one. Poker. We. Gary. Nye. Was a flight. Admiral. To go up. Not. To. Not. Bill. Not. We got wet. Not. So we. Not. Stop. Not. An island. Not. And. Not. Options. Not. Officer. Not. For
not at
on
not at
is
not at
big
not at not at
get the big
not at
that time
not at
was one
not at
poker
not at not at
we Gary
and
I was a flight admiral to go up
at 42 back to
Henville. We got wet so we stopped
an
island
and
base
part of
for on his big the big that time was one poker.
Tell me about
Gary.
Tell me about
Nye.
Tell me about
was a flight.
Tell me about
Admiral.
Tell me about
to go up.
Tell me about
to
tell me about
Anvil. We got wet, so we stopped an island and options officer for on his big get the big that time was one poker. Gary and I was a flight admiral to go up to Anvil. We got wet, so we stopped an island and options officer for on his big Island. and
I had
options officer
and let
for
enter
on his big
that's from
get the big at that time
it
was one
from
poker
back
we
didn't the crew.
Gary
I didn't
and I was a flight admiral to go up
I didn't
to Greenville
I didn't
we got wet out so we
I didn't
stop
yes.
an island
for that
yes. and
for that
yes.
For that
options
for that
officer
for that
for
that and
on
for that
is
for that and
big
for that for that and
get the big
for that
that time
we can
it was one
time we can
poker
time we can time we can
we
time we can time we can
Gary
time we can
nigh
time we can
was a flight
time we can
admiral
time we can
back to go up
time we can
back to
isn't Harry back
Greenville
isn't Harry back
we got wet
isn't Harry back
so we
isn't Harry back
stop
isn't Harry back
island
isn't Harry back
and
isn't Harry back isn't Harry back isn't Harry back
officer
isn't Harry
for
you know this
on
back
is
about a
big
my wife was you
get the big at that time
well there's
it was one
survived it.
Poker
fortunately right. thank you for
we
thank you
not at
not at
Gary
not at
and I
not at
was a flight
not at
not at